From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. And thanks also to Patricio Rubio, Kimberly Izar, Genevieve Hartnett for filling in for me last week. Well, coming up on the local edition, the Home Energy Assistance Program is finally open in New York. We'll get a check-in from Sullivan County Commissioner of Health and Human Services, John Little, on where things stand for the Home Energy Assistance Program. And New York Focus reports that Governor Hochul's bought some time on pollution rules. The state's ready to collect data on emissions, but is still fighting a court order to cut emissions. Both of those stories coming up in the second half of the program. And we cover the dozens of Hudson Valley residents who are days away from becoming U.S. citizens until the federal government pulled the plug. We talk to Ulster County Clerk Taylor Brook in just a few minutes. But first up, New York Attorney General Letitia James has opened up an investigation into an incident involving a man who was struck and killed by an off-duty officer with the Monticello Village Police Department. The New York Attorney General's office says the man was struck by the off-duty officer in their personal vehicle around 6:03 a.m. on November 25th while crossing near the intersection of Pleasant and High Streets in Monticello. But Monticello Police Chief David Lindsay told Radio Catskill the incident actually occurred at 6 p.m., and a point that was mid-block, meaning not at an intersection. The man was transported to local hospital and later pronounced dead 5 days later on November 30th. Neither the officer involved in the crash nor the person who was killed have been identified, but Monticello Police Chief Lindsay says the officer involved is not working at this time. Chief Lindsay also says that he was on the scene and that he immediately turned the scene over to Sullivan County Sheriff's Office and reported the incident to the New York Attorney General's Office, as according to state law. Thank you so much to Radio Catskill reporter Kimberly Izar for her work on this story. We reached out to Sullivan County Sheriff's Office today for additional information. We'll bring you any updates here on air and at WJFFradio.org, where the full version of this story is currently posted with much more detail, along with all of the latest local news and regional news. It's always there. Keep an eye on WJFFradio.org. Now news from Ulster County, where a naturalization ceremony that was supposed to happen this Friday has been abruptly canceled by U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, one of several ceremonies that were scrapped across the Hudson Valley this week, and it's also the latest of several instances where Ulster County learned that the ceremony would be canceled, each time with a different explanation. For the background on what happened, the latest explanations from federal officials and the impact this has on local folks who worked hard to become citizens. Tim Bruno spoke with Ulster County Clerk-elect Taylor Brook this morning.
Well, they originally canceled all upstate ceremonies about 3 weeks ago. They reached out and just said that the December ceremonies were going to be canceled and that there would be no more ceremonies going forward indefinitely. The excuse they gave at that time was that our courts did not meet the statutory requirements necessary for the ceremonies. We pushed back on that, citing the fact that we do, in fact, meet the statutory requirements, the requirements being a seal and a court clerk with local jurisdiction, all things that we've had for centuries here in our local courts. So they rescinded the cancellations at that time. And then early last week, they canceled them for a different reason. And now they said that there's not enough candidates to be naturalized, which is something we've not heard from them in the past. We typically would just do a smaller ceremony if there wasn't as many as they expected. But this is the first time we've ever heard that there wasn't enough citizens to be naturalized.
And there's no legal minimum requirement for the number of citizens to be naturalized, is there?
No, there's not. It seems to be an internal policy from USCIS. We have reached out, and our Congressman Pat Ryan has sent a letter to the director of USCIS to see what that new quota is, because it's not something that used to exist, and they haven't told us that the policy has changed. Last year, in 2024, we were told that there was a backlog of people waiting to be naturalized, so we started scheduling our ceremonies at larger venues to be able to naturalize more folks at once. So we had asked for up to 100, no indication as to how close to that number we were going to get, and no idea how many there were waiting. We just know that according to them, it was not enough.
Have you heard directly from any of the affected candidates or their families?
Not any that we know of that we're planning on being at the December ceremony. A few folks have reached out that are at the final stages of the process. that we're concerned whether or not they will be scheduled in the future for one. But I'm not even sure or confident that the folks who were eligible and waiting were notified by USCIS that there was even going to be a ceremony in December to begin with. I have no idea what the communication between them has been.
As you mentioned, this was not just Ulster, but also Dutchess and Putnam counties all had ceremonies canceled at the same time. Do you see this as a broader shift in policy or practice at USCIS? And you had mentioned that they revised that earlier decision. Are there concerns about consistency and transparency as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the consistency and transparency has been all over the place. This is just the most recent in a string of changes that they've made. More recently, about 6 months ago, they rescinded the policy of reimbursement for local counties. Counties used to get reimbursed per person that they naturalized. And we, again, received an email that just said we won't be being reimbursed anymore and don't expect to ever be reimbursed again going forward. And Dutchess, Putnam, and Ulster are the most recent ones to have ours canceled, but a number of counties that had ceremonies planned in November had theirs canceled as well. Westchester, I believe, Rockland, Tompkins, really all over the state. So from county to county, they're being canceled for seemingly different reasons. We can't get much information about why these policies are changing. And we just wish that we had more information and, frankly, that nothing would change. There was no problem with our ceremonies being hosted locally. They were wonderful events. All the other county clerks that host them all say the same thing. One of the most patriotic things we have the opportunity to do as clerks. And we're all just kind of confused.
Do you think that New York counties, upstate counties are being targeted specifically?
You know, I think it's a federal issue. I haven't checked with clerks in other states, but, you know, Democrat and Republican counties are both being affected by this. Both Democrat and Republican lawmakers and representatives want to keep the naturalization ceremonies locally. Legal immigration is something we all generally agree on. So I don't feel it's targeted. It seems Immigration Services wants these ceremonies to happen at federal locations where they have more control over what's going on. It just makes it very inconvenient for our local constituents.
What do the local ceremonies provide that, you know, these larger centralized, you know, federal ones perhaps cannot? And you mentioned, you know, it's a shared patriotic celebration.
Absolutely. Well, when you do them at the federal locations, there is no ceremony. It's essentially like going to the DMV. You show up to a window with your paperwork, you take the oath in front of one person, and then you go home a citizen. What we offer locally is more of a celebration. We do it at either the ceremonial courtroom in the Ulster Courthouse or at a local college. So what it does is allow our friends and neighbors to be part of the process and to welcome in our new citizens. And they also act as an educational opportunity. We always invite school groups to attend, and we, the elected officials, stay after and talk to the students about the process. And they're all live streamed when we do them in Ulster County. Radio Kingston live streams them. So folks who have family that might still be in their country of origin can tune in and watch and celebrate along with them. So it goes from really a public celebration and a welcoming ceremony to just a typical administrative function.
You and other county advocates and leaders had a press conference on Friday to talk about reinstatement. You publicly reached out and said to the government, please reinstate. Have you heard anything back?
No, not at this time. We haven't heard anything. Again, our congressmen have written letters to the director directly. We've sent emails to USCIS for clarification on what that new quota is to make sure that anything we can do to make sure that they happen in 2026, we are ready and willing to do. But as of today, we have not heard a word, no.
Are there any other steps you're taking or the county's taking to press for answers or push for reinstatement?
Not at this time. It's tough to know even what to do. it really makes it difficult when you often don't hear back. You have your lawmakers at the federal level all working on it. Mike Lawler was able to have some success when they canceled them the first time, but these most recent string of cancellations, we're all just kind of shrugging, reaching out to folks in power who might be able to have answers. But when you don't receive any, it's hard to know where to go. And I can't imagine what the folks that are waiting to be naturalized feel, because I'm sure they're in a similar boat. A lot of this process comes down to a small group of people making decisions. And if those people are not responsive or being transparent, we're all left in the dark.
Is that the case for those folks who were planning to, you know, be naturalized? Are they left in limbo as well? I mean, if they continue to cancel these ceremonies, what options exist to ensure they aren't left in limbo?
My understanding is they can contact the federal offices themselves. So locally in the Hudson Valley here, the closest ones are in Albany or New York City. We have heard that there have been folks that are being naturalized at the federal facilities as recent as last week. So it seems like folks are still being naturalized. It's just a bit slower and potentially more confusing.
Is there anything you'd like to say directly to those folks who were preparing to become citizens this week?
I would just like to apologize to them on behalf of the country. These are folks that have done everything the right way. You know, they've quote unquote come in through the front door. They followed the process, and I'm hopeful that USCIS does reinstate these for 2026. We have really big plans. 2026 is the 250th anniversary of the country, and it being one of the most patriotic things you can do, becoming a naturalized citizen, I would just tell them, hold tight. We're working on it. We're advocating as hard as we possibly can, trying everything we can to make it easier for them, because they certainly shouldn't be being punished for doing it the right way.
Thank you, Tim Bruno. Remember, you can hear Tim every weekday morning at 10 on Radio Chatskill, and the full version of that story is up now at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Chatskill. Listen local.
It is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. And as you may know, New York State has an expansive climate change law that calls for many changes to be made on the timeline to curb climate change. Colin Kinneborough covers the state's climate environmental politics for New York Focus, and his latest reporting finds that New York is ready to collect data on emissions, but is still fighting a court order to cut emissions, a court order that follows directly from the state's own law. Patricio Rubio spoke with Colin Kinneborough this morning.
Just right around 1 year ago, I was reporting some of the details that were starting to come out. They were late in putting out the rules, but they were supposed to come out at the start of this year. And then all of a sudden in January, unexpectedly, Governor Hochul changed her mind. It wasn't in her state of the state agenda for this year. She shelved the plan. And ultimately, it really seems to come down to concerns about affordability. I think the governor was very concerned by the possibility that this could raise costs on some New Yorkers, although a lot of the studies and modeling, even by, you know, state agencies themselves, showed that for a lot of New Yorkers, it could save them money. But I think particularly with an election coming up next year in 2026 and Governor Hochul making affordability a top issue, the idea that there was even the possibility that it could raise prices on anyone, I guess, was very unpalatable to her. And so that seems to be the major factor driving her decision to pause it, which then prompted this lawsuit that I've been covering.
What exactly do these new emissions reporting rules require from polluters, and when do they actually go into effect?
Again, back in January, what the governor said was, okay, we're not going to do this full cap and invest plan. Instead, we're going to carve out this one piece, which is just to collect data on emissions, basically for all the major polluters in the state. Until this point, the federal government has been doing a lot of that as well, a lot of that data collection. But the Trump administration actually wants to pull that back. You know, particularly with that in mind, the state has been saying, okay, we really need to do our own. So basically, yeah, this sets out how the biggest polluters are going to need to report their emissions to the state. And it really only starts in 2027 that polluters need to report their emissions for the previous year, so 2026. And any data they collect could theoretically be used to inform some kind of pollution cutting rules in the future, like a cap and invest program. But that part is still, as of now, hypothetical.
what exactly does it mean for everyday New Yorkers? How would this affect them for, let's say, next year and for the long term? Would it affect public health? Would it affect energy costs or equity?
Yeah, I think the first dimension that a lot of people think about here is energy costs. And I think most evidence suggests that if you put a price on pollution through some kind of auction system like this cap and invest system would have set up, that there will be a sticker price increase at the gas pump and on your gas bills, for example, if you heat your home with gas. Now, the state had laid out a whole plan to offset those costs with rebates to New Yorkers. I think they'd set aside about $1 billion worth was the ballpark number to go back to New Yorkers in the first year of the program, which was, you know, expected to make up or more than make up the added cost for many people. And then for a lot of people, you know, and then the rest of the money raised through the program would go into things like switching people over to, you know, new efficient electric appliances like heat pumps to heat their homes, which in a lot of cases, particularly if you have an old oil burning boiler, can be quite a bit cheaper. So people would have a chance to save money there. And Cap and Invest, to the extent that it still exists, has been renamed the Clean Air Initiative. So clearly, in terms of, you know, reduced air pollution, that's one of the big benefits that the state had been touting from the program and that advocates continue to tout, burning less fossil fuels in our homes and obviously less pollution from our cars means, yeah, that people have cleaner air. That means typically less deaths associated with things like asthma and all the rest. So there are public health benefits that the state had been projecting that don't really come into the cost conversation very much.
Yeah. How does the change in federal climate policies have an effect on all of this?
Everything that the Trump administration has been doing to make it harder for New York to, and for the country as a whole, to move to renewable energy is, you know, making it harder to move ahead on these broader economy-wide plans. If it's cheaper to build renewable energy, it's cheaper to move the whole economy, to move our homes and our cars and everything else onto clean energy. So as long as the Trump administration is fighting that and taking away tax credits and things, federal support that has historically made it cheaper for states like New York to shift to these kinds of energy, the more that, you know, it essentially shifts the burden to people paying for these things at the local level. So that's a big argument that you've been hearing from Hochul's administration, that without these federal support, it's simply not possible for the state to move ahead on its own because it's just going to cost people too much. I think a lot of people would debate that and want to see the state find a way to lead at this time when the federal government is stepping back. But that's certainly the case they've made.
Just looking ahead, you know, what should be looking at? What should the public be looking at, or what should advocates are looking for in the next 6 to 12 months now?
That's a great question. A lot of the groups are still just putting out kind of their agendas for 2026. Certainly the groups that have been, you know, fighting the state in court over Cap and Invest would like to see some kind of program roll out as soon as possible. They filed their response in court on Friday and said that, you know, the judge, the court should stick to its guns and maintain this February deadline or something as close as possible. So there's still a push to keep Cap and Invest moving forward as quickly as possible. And again, keep in mind that Cap and Invest was something that was supposed to help pay for all of these other things the state wanted to do on climate. So that's a big thing. There are still also some items lingering from this past year. So I know there's still a big push ongoing to basically end a long time subsidies for new natural gas hookups. That's known as the 100-foot rule. There's a bill that passed at the end of the year, at the end of the legislative session back in June that would do that. And Governor Hochul hasn't indicated yet whether she's going to sign it. So that's an ongoing push. And again, that would affect the energy system for years to come. So those are a few of the items that come to mind.
Colin, as always, thank you so much for your reporting. And I'm sure, you know, obviously, we got to keep a lookout for those things you mentioned. Colin, before we go, is there anything else we have not touched on you want folks to know?
No, I think we covered it. I think, you know, the state is at continues to be at this pivotal moment over its energy policy where, you know, the governor has really moved from what was, you know, the heart of the climate plan laid out a couple of years ago, a shift to mostly to renewable energy, to wind, solar, batteries, and has shifted to what she calls this all of the above strategy, which, you know, includes ongoing use of natural gas. We've seen her approving new pipelines as well. So there's this big shift that we're seeing in the state's climate politics that reflects national politics, but it's still really up in the air which way things are going to go. So yeah, there's just a ton going on my beat, and I'm excited to see what happens in 2026.
We're talking to Colin Kitterborough, environmental reporter for New York Focus, about the latest delays, or just say change in policy for New York State when it comes to climate change. Again, Colin, thank you so much for talking to us. I do really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Robayo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. You can find all of Colin Kinneborough's environmental reporting at nysfocus.com. One more story before we go tonight. It's an update on HEAP season, which has finally reached Sullivan County. For the latest on the Home Energy Assistance Program, Patricio Robayo spoke with John Little, County Commissioner of Health and Human Services.
Everything at this point is operating as normal. We were significantly delayed because of the federal government shutdown, and then even for a while after the shutdown, because it takes time for the money to get sent from the feds to the state, and then the state sets up auto payments to the various fuel vendors. But anybody that needs to apply now, they can come into our offices. They can call our HEAP office at 845-807-0142. We have an email address, heap@sullivanny.gov. And folks can also go to mybenefits.ny.gov to submit their application. So all the normal ways to go about applying for HEAP are there. You could call those phone numbers or email us to check on the status of your application. There have been some changes through the Big Beautiful Bill as far as connecting HEAP benefits and SNAP benefits that, you know, may be causing issues for folks. So we encourage folks to give us a call or send us an email, and we can look into those issues for them. But the program is, at this point, is pretty much operating normally.
Right. Now, for folks who have been on HEAP in the past, do they have to renew, or this automatically, you know, renewed for this year also?
So a lot of those renewals should have happened by now. So if folks were expecting that to happen, again, I said that in your last question there that, you know, there are issues, there are changes coming in the regulations. So I want to make sure that folks are able to get connected. So if folks are expecting something and haven't seen it yet, they probably should be contacting us to make sure that everything is set up for the season.
Now, can you state some of the changes that are coming down the pike or have been made?
So what we're aware of was changes to what has been called HEAT and EAT. And what that does is connects SNAP cases to HEAP cases. And, you know, we just went through the disruptions with SNAP because of the federal shutdown. So that's what I'm talking about. Like, to be honest, I haven't seen a lot of those changes and how they're playing out directly. But that's why I'm putting it out to you now that if anybody sees any sort of disruption, that's something we want to know about, because we want to make sure that there wasn't some sort of change to regulations that caused a normally auto-paid benefit to stop. That's kind of why I'm putting that out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yes. Okay, now I see what you mean there. Okay, great. Now, you know, we're hearing that, you know, usually there's a second round of HEAP in the following year. How is that looking? I know, you know, with the disruptions, you know, that sort of delayed this round of HEAP. Do you anticipate or any delays for that round of HEAP?
Yeah, so what we're expecting this year is that there is going to be one emergency benefit. In the past, there has usually been at least two. What we've seen over the last 5 years is that has been able to happen in New York and other states because additional money was pushed to the program because of the pandemic and the American Rescue Plan and all the extra money that flowed because of that legislation during and post-pandemic. So those things have essentially dried up and we're back to level funding, which basically means that there is a single benefit and an emergency benefit that comes on January 1st. So folks will be able to apply for their emergency benefit then. And then we have also had in years past repair benefits, clean and tune benefits. Unfortunately, those are cut off this year. We have been through a lot of advocacy with the state working to see if we can get some of that restored at least. And we're hearing some hopeful news behind the scenes about it, but we don't have anything to announce on it just yet. But we do encourage folks to, you know, stay in tune with our social media and to listen to you all for any updates that we get on that, because we're hopeful to hear some updates on that soon, that there may be an opportunity to do repair and replace benefits for certain groups of folks before the end of the winter.
Since we have you on the phone and we're talking about winter, and just remind folks that we do have warming centers that are open.
Yeah, thanks. We do. The warming centers are open as they've been the last several years. They're open 7 nights a week, and we open those. They're not shelters. They're just overnight stations. So they work from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. That's what we're kind of staffed for. But that's a way for folks to come in out of the cold. They are available at the Liberty United Methodist Church on Main Street in Liberty, and St. John's Episcopal Church on St. John Street, which, if you're familiar with Monticello, it's just off Broadway by the Monticello Diner, Miss Monticello Diner. So those are places that folks can go. We have seen more utilization earlier in the season than we have in years past, because obviously it's been a little bit colder recently. Our homeless numbers in general have stabilized after a spike we saw this fall, but that's our kind of fallback in case we run out of space at the warming centers, because we have seen escalating use the last couple of years. So those are things that we're looking at and we can make available. And one thing I would offer up to folks if they're not aware is that if you are on the street and homeless at night anytime during the season, local police departments are a way to get connected to us after hours so that you can get help with placement at a warming center or in a hotel if needed. So that's something for folks to be aware of also.
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that. Yes, it's been really tough to see the weather. My heart goes out to those folks. So, John, if there's anything else you want to add or anything else before we go?
Well, it's certainly been a busy season already with all the disruptions in SNAP and HEAP as well. But we're busy with all of our other programs too. So, you know, childcare is still something that we're working really hard on and hoping to see some changes at the state level as far as funding for future years. So that's something that we definitely encourage people to ask their elected officials about at the state level, because if you're concerned about affordability of childcare, we are too. They are too. I know I've talked with our local elected officials on that, but helping them share that story with the decision makers in Albany, I think, is going to be a very important issue for all of us this coming year, because budgets are tight, but this is also a very important issue for us. So something that we definitely want to keep talking about and make sure folks are aware of.
Absolutely. Well, we're talking to Sullivan County Health and Human Services Commissioner John Little about the latest on what's going on with HEAP, and also letting us know that the warming centers are open if you need it. So, John, thank you, as always, thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you, Patricio.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. And thank you for listening. That's going to be it for the local edition tonight. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, coming up, we have our amazing Monday night lineup of great talk news programs, including the Laura Flanders Show at 7, Sabrina Artell's Trailer Talk at 7:30, and the Janice Adams Show at 8. But before any of that, coming up next, we've got The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Hi, I'm Andy Carlson, a volunteer on-air host here at Radio Catskill. I'd like to wish everyone listening a happy, healthy holiday full of love and good cheer. From all of us here at Radio Catskill, thank you for listening. Have a safe and festive holiday season, and Happy New Year.
Hey, this is Matt Hurtado. Join me for Virtual Soundscapes, your gateway to the best music in gaming. Classic tracks from the 8-bit era, modern releases, and interviews with the minds behind the games. Wednesday night at 9 on Radio Catskill.
Listen to Farming Country, your window into rural life in the Catskills and Delaware River Valley. Hear from local farmers, learn about sustainable agriculture, and more. Farming Country, Saturday mornings at 10 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.